This article is brought to you by the best-selling books 8 Right Every Time, The Black Book of Eamon Blackthorne. Because the right words, at the right moment, change everything. The role of emotion in negotiation conflicts. Why feelings drive every conflict, and what that means for resolution. In short, emotion in negotiation conflicts is not interference, it is the mechanism. What people say they want is rarely what the conflict is actually about. Beneath every hard demand lies a feeling fear of loss, the sting of disrespect, or the need to matter. Understand the feeling, and the path through the conflict opens. Definition: emotion in negotiation refers to the feelings, including fear, anger, pride, and shame, that shape what each party demands, resists, and ultimately accepts during a conflict. These emotional states often determine the trajectory of the negotiation more than the stated terms do. There is a pattern I have watched play out across decades of sitting with people in conflict. Two parties, both reasonable people on any other day, locked in a dispute neither can seem to move. The terms on the table are clear. The rational solution is visible to everyone in the room, and yet nothing shifts. The negotiation stalls, or worse, it deteriorates. What people tend to blame at that point is stubbornness, bad faith, or personality. What is actually happening is something older and more fundamental. Emotion in negotiation conflicts is not a complicating factor. It is the primary driver of how those conflicts unfold. Understanding that distinction does not just make you a more perceptive observer. It changes what you do, what you say, and when you say it. Why emotion in negotiation conflicts runs deeper than the stated terms. Most people understand that emotions play a role in conflict. They know that someone who feels disrespected will dig in harder. They know that anger makes a conversation more difficult. That awareness, while accurate, barely scratches the surface of what is actually happening. The common reading is that emotion is a layer on top of the real negotiation. Remove the emotion, the thinking goes, and the rational interests emerge. That is where most people go wrong. Emotion does not sit above the negotiation. It is woven into every position, every demand, and every refusal from the beginning. When someone refuses a compromise that would serve their practical interests, there's almost always an emotional reason underneath. Fear of losing ground. The feeling that saying yes would mean admitting they were wrong. The sense that the other party does not respect them enough for agreement to feel safe. The stated position is the surface. The emotion is the foundation that position is built on. This is why logical argument alone rarely resolves deep negotiation conflicts. You can dismantle someone's stated position point by point, and they will find new objections, because the emotional driver has not been addressed. The conflict is not about what it says it is about. The mechanics. How feelings shape every move at the table. Here is where the analysis needs to go deeper, because the mechanism matters. When a person enters a conflict, their nervous system starts making assessments before their conscious mind has caught up. Is this threat to my position also a threat to my standing? Will agreeing mean losing? Does this person see me as an equal? Those assessments are emotional, and they happen fast. Once the brain registers a threat, whether it is to safety, status, or fairness, the shift in behavior is almost instantaneous. If you have ever watched a reasonable negotiation turn hostile within a single exchange, you've seen the amygdala hijack in action. The prefrontal cortex, where careful thought and compromise live, gets sidelined. The person in front of you is no longer negotiating. They are defending. Three emotional triggers produce this shift most reliably in conflict situations. The first is perceived unfairness. People will reject an outcome that is objectively better for them if the process felt rigged or the other party seemed to gain disproportionately. The feeling of being shortchanged overrides the logic of the outcome. The second is identity threat. When accepting a term means conceding that they were wrong, or foolish, or less capable, many people will hold a losing position rather than absorb that blow to their self-image. They are not being irrational. They are protecting something that feels more important in that moment than the practical outcome. The third is loss aversion. The emotional weight of losing something already held is consistently stronger than the pull of gaining something equivalent. In a negotiation conflict, this means that the party who feels they stand to lose something will fight harder and feel more intensely than the party who stands to gain the same amount. That asymmetry is worth knowing. Each of these emotional drivers produces visible behaviors: the sudden hardening of a position, the dismissal of reasonable proposals, the personal edge that enters the language. When you learn to read those behaviors as emotional signals rather than tactical moves, you stop responding to the wrong thing. What this looks like when it is actually happening. Consider a salary renegotiation, where both parties want the person to stay. The numbers are close. The employer makes an offer the employee privately considers acceptable. The employee rejects it sharply, and the conversation ends badly. From the outside, this looks irrational. From the inside, the employee felt the way the offer was delivered communicated that the company did not value them. The number was almost right. The feeling it produced was completely wrong. The conflict was never about the figure. Or take a common team conflict over credit and attribution. Two colleagues are in dispute about who deserves recognition for a project outcome. The manager tries to split the credit evenly. Neither person accepts this, and the tension escalates. To the manager, the solution is obvious. To each colleague, accepting half the credit feels like confirming the other's version of events. Identity is in the room, and it is louder than fairness. These situations are not edge cases. They are the standard texture of negotiation conflicts in real workplaces. Unmet needs are almost always somewhere in the structure, and until they are named, the surface argument keeps regenerating. Why the emotional layer stays hidden for so long? If emotion drives negotiation conflict this reliably, why do so many people miss it? Part of the answer is social convention. We have been taught, especially in professional settings, that conflict should be handled rationally. Naming the emotional dimension can feel like weakness, or like an accusation. So both parties maintain the fiction that the disagreement is purely practical. They argue about terms, processes, and facts. They build logical cases. Neither person names what is actually fueling the impasse, because doing so feels risky or out of place. The emotional engine runs beneath the surface, unseen and unaddressed, while the visible argument goes in circles. There's also a timing problem. By the time a conflict has developed enough for someone to recognize the emotional pattern, they are usually already inside it. It is genuinely difficult to observe your own emotional state with clarity when your nervous system is treating the negotiation as a threat. I have found myself, after decades of watching this in others, still caught in my own emotional reactions during a sharp disagreement, defending a position I privately knew was less than ideal, because letting go felt like losing. That self-awareness has to be built before the conversation, not during it. The person who prepares emotionally, not just tactically, enters the conflict with far more room to move. A quick note before we continue. Most people leave the hardest conversations for last, and regret the words they used when they finally had them. The best-selling book Say It Right Every Time gives you 115 tested scripts for those exact moments, the ones that shape careers, relationships, and how people remember you. Get your copy at emonblickthorne.com. Now, back to the article. What understanding the emotional mechanism actually changes. When you accept that emotion in negotiation conflicts is structural rather than incidental, several practical shifts follow. You stop arguing against positions and start asking about origins. A position is a symptom. The question underneath it is, what is this person protecting? What would it cost them, emotionally, to move? When you understand that, you can address it directly. How you de-escalate arguments in live settings depends entirely on reading which emotional trigger is active. You manage your own emotional state as a priority, not an afterthought. If you arrive at the table already reactive, you cannot think clearly about what the other person needs. Slowing your breathing, pausing before responding, and refusing to match the other person's escalation are not soft skills. They are strategic advantages. You look for the identity question underneath the stated demand. When someone digs in on something that does not seem worth the fight, ask yourself what agreeing would cost them personally. Offering a way for them to move without losing face is often the most direct route to resolution. Structured approaches like the deal method work partly because they create the procedural safety that allows people to move without feeling they have surrendered. You name what you observe carefully. There is a difference between saying you seem angry and saying, I can hear that this feels important to you, and I want to understand why. The second opens a door. The first closes one. Working through disagreements around feedback is a frequent place where this distinction matters enormously, because feedback conflicts carry a heavy identity charge. When two colleagues are locked in a conflict that has turned genuinely hostile, rebuilding that working relationship requires acknowledging the emotional damage before any practical resolution can hold. And when the people involved have stopped cooperating entirely, specific approaches to diffuse entrenched tension are worth having ready. The conflict beneath the conflict. Here is the truth of it. In plain terms, most people enter a negotiation conflict believing they are arguing about terms. They are almost never arguing only about terms. They are arguing about whether they're seen, whether they're respected, whether the outcome will confirm or threaten something they believe about themselves or the world. That does not make the practical terms unimportant. It means the terms cannot be resolved durably until the emotional current running beneath them is acknowledged. You do not need to become a counsellor to do this. You need to be curious rather than combative, and patient enough to ask the question one layer deeper than the obvious one. This much I know for certain: the negotiators who move conflicts forward most consistently are not the ones with the best arguments. They are the ones who understand what the other person is actually afraid of losing, and who create enough safety for both parties to stop defending and start solving. Mastering emotion in negotiation is not about suppressing what you feel. It is about understanding what feelings are doing to the conversation and choosing to work with that reality rather than pretend it is not there. Frequently asked questions. What is emotion in negotiation conflicts? Emotion in negotiation conflicts refers to the feelings, such as fear, anger, and shame, that shape what each party demands and resists. These emotional states often drive the conflict more than the stated issue does, determining what feels acceptable and what feels like a threat. How does emotion affect the outcome of a negotiation conflict? Emotion in negotiation shapes every concession, refusal, and offer made at the table. When someone feels threatened or disrespected, they stop problem solving and start defending. That shift from interest to position is almost always emotional in origin, and it is what makes conflict so hard to move. How do you manage emotion in a negotiation conflict? You manage emotion in negotiation by first recognizing your own triggers before the conversation begins, then focusing on the other person's underlying fear rather than their stated position. Naming what you observe without judgment and slowing the pace of the exchange both reduce emotional escalation. Why do negotiation conflicts escalate even when both sides want a resolution? Conflicts escalate because each side's emotional state interprets the other's behavior as threatening, even when no threat is intended. A firm tone reads as aggression. A pause reads as contempt. Once both parties are in a defensive emotional posture, logic loses its grip and the conflict feeds itself. What is the link between unmet needs and emotion in negotiation? Unmet needs produce the emotions that fuel conflict. When someone's need for fairness, recognition, or security goes unacknowledged, the resulting frustration or fear takes over the negotiation. Addressing the emotional need directly, before debating terms, is often the fastest route to genuine progress. Can showing emotion in a negotiation conflict help or hurt you? Showing emotion can help if it is clear, controlled, and honest. Saying you feel overlooked is more productive than showing it through aggression. Uncontrolled emotional display, especially anger or contempt, damages trust, signals weakness in composure, and tends to trigger a matching emotional response in the other person. Thank you for listening. If this article helped, the best-selling book Say It Right Every Time will take you the rest of the way. 115 scripts ready to use whenever you need them. Visit emonblackthorne.com to get your copy.